We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, we're joined by Neil Chilson. He is a senior research fellow at the Center for Growth and Opportunity. He is also the former chief technologist at the FTC, the author of the book, Getting Out of Control, Emergent Leadership in a Complex World. And he's got a Substack as well. We're going to talk about that in a bit. Neil, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
So the context here is we're talking the day after Sam Altman's very first congressional testimony on generative AI. Obviously, he's the CEO of OpenAI, which is the parent company of ChatGPT. So there's a lot of conversation very suddenly, a lot of lobbying money being spent very suddenly here in Washington, D.C. in regards to generative AI. Neil, you wrote a Substack post on a modest proposal when it comes to AI, your own sort of Jonathan Swift take on what could happen or what should happen, perhaps on the regulatory front when it comes to AI. First of all, tell us where people can find the Substack post and flesh out the argument a little bit.
Sure. So the Substack post is at outofcontrol.substack.com. And it's the top post there, and it'll probably be the pinned post for a little while. So check it out. The context for this was I was somewhat air quotes inspired by yesterday's Senate hearing, where Sam Altman and a couple others testified to the Judiciary Committee about the role of AI and the role of government in AI. And you know, Sam and OpenAI have introduced artificial intelligence to millions of people for the first time, I think, in a concrete way. By opening up ChatGPT last fall, they really started a Cambrian explosion of innovation in this space, even getting some of the bigger tech players to wake up and shake off the dust and try to jump into the AI space, where they had long had investments, but maybe hadn't delivered products really yet. So that's great. And there's so much happening in that space. And it was surprising to see yesterday to have Altman and his fellow testifiers, as well as several of the senators, essentially agree that there should be a digital regulator or some sort of regulator for AI. I don't know that I've ever seen an industry that's as sort of nascent to the public mind go in front of Congress and immediately be like, hey, yeah, but also regulate us. We would really like that.
He called for actual AI agency, right? Like that's OpenAI, and he's not alone. Other people from OpenAI have said we need like a regulatory agency for generative AI.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, it wasn't 100% clear what he was asking for. I thought it was a bit more clear what Professor Marcus was asking for. It wasn't clear what the scope of what Altman was asking for, but it did seem like they generally agree that there should be some sort of regulator. And in particular, Altman mentioned a sort of licensing regime, which raised the hackles for many people who have experience with occupational licensing and other issues and have seen the real barriers to competition that they can provide. But I don't want to read too much into what Altman was supporting there. I mean, his position may be more nuanced than it came across in the hearing. But in any case, I was somewhat inspired by that call for a regulatory agency on AI to think about like what was the problem that the Congress was trying to solve here. And there was a lot of talk about AI, but nobody really drilled into the specifics. Artificial intelligence is an incredibly broad topic. The only thing that might be, as I point out in my post, you know, AI includes everything from health diagnostic software to autonomous vehicles, to the DALL-E image generation and some of the other tools that we're using, to even, you know, predictive text on your phones. I mean, they all kind of count as AI. The discussion yesterday didn't really drill into what they meant on AI. And so it's so broad that the only thing that's probably broader than artificial intelligence is, you know, just plain old regular intelligence. And so I wrote a sort of modest proposal in the Swiftian style, calling for an agency to regulate intelligence. I said, you know, like, let's not, if we're going to regulate artificial intelligence, let's not discriminate against its natural counterpart. Yeah. So, you know, so the argument was essentially, argument from the ridiculous, torture ridiculous. What would it look like to have an agency that regulated all intelligence? Because that's about as general. And so using the acronym that some of the OpenAI folks have called for, which is OASIS, I ran through and I, with the help of ChatGPT, wrote this essay arguing that if we're worried about artificial intelligence and the harm that it could cause, how much more should we be worried about human intelligence? After all, it created artificial intelligence, and so and has brought us to the brink of disaster many times. The main point here is that if you think it's too broad to regulate all intelligence, to have an agency that would look at intelligence and then try to regulate all its effects, probably too broad to have an agency that's just looking at artificial intelligence and regulating all its effects. Instead, we should be focused on the actual uses of artificial intelligence and how those impact various things. And so, we should probably have an agency. We should look to an agency that's an expert in vehicle regulation when we're talking about autonomous vehicles, et cetera. And so, and these generative AIs, they're sort of general purpose technologies. And so it's hard to know what specific agency might focus on them, but it might be something like the Federal Trade Commission, although they don't have a particularly good recent track record in focusing on where consumers are injured, and it tends to be much more of a politicized agency than it used to be. Anyways, I'm rambling a little bit, but that's the sort of gist of the quite short piece. But I hope your listeners will check it out. It was fun to do.
Well, it's actually really interesting because that's the kind of chicken or egg dilemma when it comes to artificial intelligence, is how it can fundamentally be disconnected from human intelligence when it's a product of human intelligence. It is fueled by human intelligence. And at a certain point, sure, it becomes divorced from human control. And I'm saying this as somebody who's like fairly alarmist about AI. We've done a bunch of episodes where I'm like, man, this stuff is happening really quickly and it's really scary. But we saw what happened with the Restrict Act when it came to TikTok. Typically, when you have big companies, major multinational companies lobbying for regulation, it should be setting off alarm bells because it means that they're trying to stifle competition and curry favor with the government and all of that. So I wonder, Neil, as somebody who's actually been at the FTC, what your perspective is or what your confidence level is as this technology is, I think we all are in agreement, developing really rapidly in some great directions and some frightening directions, as Altman himself conceded at the hearing on Tuesday. What's your confidence level in our ability to sort of keep up with it, even where like the most like libertarian type person would look in and say, we probably need to do something here because it's like actual fake election video or something, like worst case scenario. Right. What confidence level do you have right now?
So, it's always challenging when you're looking at an area of new technology. I think what makes it easier in some cases is if your focus is on the harms that you're worried about. And the harms here, let's set aside the sort of existential harms. And I'm not poo-pooing those. I think we should think about those for sure. But aside from those, the types of harms that people are worrying about are harms that actually we've been talking about for a decade now. Most of them are the result of digital communications, much more so than they are how you might generate them. Now, there might be a new method through which some of these like disinformation or bias or, woke AI and things like that. If you looked at the hearing on Tuesday, a lot of the concerns were basically you could have subbed out AI and just put social media in there. And it was like all the same. It's the same playbook that we've been talking about for the last, at least 5 years in Congress. And so so with that, I think not saying that we've solved those problems at all, but we do have tools in place for many of those problems. Consumer fraud, lies to people about like elections, election fraud. Like we have legal constraints on those things. We have agencies that are charged with policing those. Are those agencies effective? I think maybe not, but that's sort of separate from the AI question, right? And so the question should be, what does AI bring that's new? What does it ramp up as far as threats in this space? And what might we need to do to increase the capabilities of agencies? And I think that's an easier question than it is to say, like, do we have to keep on top of every development of AI? Well, no, maybe we just need to focus on what the effects are and focus on whether or not we have the tools in place to address those effects. And I think the FTC traditionally has been, has had a focus that is much more on effects, right? Does this cause consumer injury? Does it harm competition? And if it does either of those things, then the FTC has the ability to bring tools in. Sorry, my daughter's really being loud in the background again.
It's barely coming up in the audio. So.
Oh, it is. Okay, great. Yeah. excellent. So, yeah. So that would be my approach. I mean, that's how I think about keeping up with technology, and that's why the FTC, despite having a very general statute, has been able to, become the primary privacy regulator of the U.S. because it's taken a case-by-case enforcement approach, which is more flexible than when you write down a bunch of rules about how a company or an industry should operate. That gets out of date very quickly.
Well, and let's talk about the licensing proposal that we've heard come from people in the industry themselves, which, again, I always see as such a red flag, but it's a great example of also they're just sort of putting it out in the open. You have the big guys coming in, A, asking for regulation, and then B, asking for licensing is particularly an interesting sort of cocktail right there. And what a recipe for monopoly power and all that stuff. So could you talk to us a little bit about potential pitfalls of licensing because of the licensing regulatory approach? Because I can actually see that in a new space kind of being explained to members of Congress, senators, in a way that makes sense to them when something really scary comes up. They have the nightmare of social media as they see it sort of hanging, looming over their heads. Blumenthal, I think, said that directly yesterday, made it very explicit, the comparison between being too late to regulate social media because they think it stole the 2016 election, blah, 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 all this other stuff, and it's a danger to democracy. So that in mind, I could just see licensing being something that members of Congress are sort of fall for. What potential pitfalls could come of that approach?
Yeah. Licensing is a pit of cronyism waiting to happen, right? For the most part, licensing regimes historically have been one of the best ways for incumbents at the top of the game to stay there. Without having to compete in the marketplace. If they can raise the barriers to entry in a way that aren't just, economic, we talk a lot about this, and Capitol Hill was a bit strange because Capitol Hill has been super worried about the ability of some of the large tech companies to raise barriers to entry to competition. The best way to raise a barrier to competition is to make it illegal to compete unless you pass, some set of certifications. And so I think that the licensing regimes have every risk of having an anti-competitive effect. And in a space that is you have so many people jumping into this space in a way that I think Congress finds concerning in many ways, right? Like, we can't control this industry because there's so many people. Anybody with a computer and a nice chunky graphics processing unit can build one of these models now. And like, what do we do about that? That's a vibrant ecosystem of competition. And an easy way to shut that down would be a licensing regime and constrain that to, just the big players who can afford to comply. And as you pointed out earlier, this is a playbook that's, it's surprising that it's happening this early in this particular space, but it is a playbook that is pretty common even and well known by some of the big players. Microsoft is a big backer of OpenAI, and Microsoft has played this game in the past, and so I think they are quite aware of the potential of regulatory approaches to raise barriers to entry. I don't know for a fact that Sam Altman has this is what he has in mind. If you look at the sort of charter of OpenAI, it has always contemplated a sort of cooperative frame with government in this space. And so he may not be thinking about this particular effect as the motivation for a licensing regime. But I do think that history tells us that that is the likely effect, that a licensing regime will be one that raises barriers to entry, that makes the space less competitive, and that preferences those who are already at the top of the pile. And that's a real concern for, you know, somebody like me who likes a dynamic, innovative space, even if it feels maybe like it's a little bit out of control.
The Watchdog on Wall Street podcast with Chris Markowski. Every day, Chris helps unpack the connection between politics and the economy and how it affects your wallet.
If someone told you the recession started today, would you change anything about your daily life? Has the big recession monster already arrived? Don't be fooled by what you read. Stocks tend to outperform during a recession anyways. Make sure you're getting the most trustful information.
Whether it's happening in D.C. or down on Wall Street, it's affecting you financially. Be informed. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast with Chris Markowski on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, probably one of the best examples of this from very recent history is like a couple of years ago, Facebook, now Meta, started taking out ads in the Beltway morning newsletters asking for Section 230 reform because yep. They know they're the only ones that can sort of absorb the blows in that space that would come from Section 230 reform. But that's where it's sort of frustrating as someone who's like candidly coming at this from a fairly alarmist perspective on how sure. quickly generative AI is moving is that the sort of libertarian folks on the right are not, I think, downplaying the potential dangers of AI. And then at the same time, it's just hard to look at what a potential solution to those dangers are if there's basically a smothering of conversation about potential regulation. I'm not talking about you in particular, but it just gets really hard to have the conversation about envisioning that when, you know, it's saying, well, the regulatory pitfalls are very real. And then everyone else is saying, well, the dangers of AI are really real. So I wonder, Neil, what you think the best way to kind of, and you know, this is probably something that you've dealt with in the social media space too, what the best way to kind of balance those concerns are. It's almost impossible in this media climate and this like partisan climate, but what is the best way for people to start thinking about this so that you avoid hitting that impasse?
Well, I think in some ways, the AI discussion might be a little bit easier than the social media discussion, in that the social media discussion is entirely around speech issues, almost entirely around speech, right? Whereas AI, like I said earlier, like there's a bunch of areas in which the harms could be like physical, right? Like if you have AI medical devices, or if you have AI driven vehicles, you're talking about spaces that could actually, if they go wrong, they could kill people. And we could talk about like what our risk tolerance should be in spaces like that. Lots of very powerful, useful drugs also can kill people. And so we need to talk about like how as a society or as individuals, what is our risk tolerance for that type of benefit cost, you know, trade-off. But that's easier in some ways than talking about speech issues, where we have a strong constitutional right and limit on what government can do, plus the harms are much less tangible, although they can feel severe, but they are often less tangible when you're talking about speech. And so I think there's a better, I guess what I'm saying, I think there's a better justification for, in specific areas of and applications of AI, having a regulatory regime that looks similar to like what we might have around drugs, or what we might have around medical devices, or what we might have around, you know, automobiles. To the extent that AI is being applied in those areas, I think we have frameworks for thinking about the risk balance trade-off. And, you know, again, my priors are that in a bunch of those spaces, we probably are too risk averse, and that we should allow more experimentation. But at least we have, we're talking about the, where we might draw the line on experimentation, around automated vehicles or medical devices. So I guess my big picture is we should disaggregate. We should stop talking about AI generally and try to find a one size fits all solution for all different applications of AI. And we should focus on what are the specific AI uses that we are worried about. What are the concerns that are there? What tools do we already have in the toolkit to address some of those? And if we need to supplement those, that's a good idea, right? That's where we should be focusing our attention rather than trying to like solve the whole big ball of wax of like artificial intelligence. Like, how do we make it safe, right? We should focus on how do we make AI in vehicles safe? How do we make AI in medical devices safe? How do we make, content generation, AI, work the way that people expect it to work and that the companies make the when they make promises about how it works that way, right? Like things like that.
No, this is a really important point. And it's, it's one that I've directed at a lot of folks on the sort of new right many different times, because in so many cases, it's exactly what you're describing. We actually already have laws, and we might not have an agency, but we do have copyright laws. We do have medical malpractice laws. We do have laws, we have so very many laws.
So many laws.
We have all of the laws that can be applied in different circumstances. Like, it's just a matter of making the lawsuits. It's just a matter of, actually like being proactive and finding places where there are lapses. On that note, those places where we should be sort of looking to make sure that AI is being applied safely, I know that you've talked about election issues. Josh Hawley had a confrontation with Sam Altman a little bit about that. And Altman himself obviously conceded, yep, I'm pretty worried about that. What spaces do you think the energy should be focused on right now when it comes to conceiving safe uses and applications of AI?
Well, on that discussion, I did think like Altman's response was pretty careful. As I recall, he said, yes, it's true that you may be able to generate misinformation on these platforms, but that the harm all comes from when you distribute it on social media. So he was sort of like pointing at the previous guys. He's like, it's not us so much. And I think he has something of a point there that you could do something new at scale with AI that's convincing. And I do think that there are some concerns around election manipulation, but I think that whole narrative has been way overplayed. I mean, if you listen a little bit, it's like people are worried that that other people are dumber than them, right? And that the average voter is going to somehow get tricked into voting a different way than they would have if they just get the right combo of targeted advertisements. And if that's what you think about your average human citizen or your average U.S. citizen, then that's not a very positive belief about the ability of democracy to make educated decisions. So I'm a bit
animating belief for many like journalists and technocrats. Like that is the one thing that they now think needs to translate into new regulatory power and censorship and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's crazy to me. Like it's crazy to me to think that, you think that, the New York Times consistently having its frame on issues is not going to change people's minds, but some targeted ads generated by ChatGPT will. I just don't understand that sort of belief in the good ability to shape minds, but then like a fear of like a bad ability to shape minds. But I do think that there are some areas where I do worry about the effect of generative models ability to scale up bad behavior. And in particular, I think cybersecurity is a big one. I mean, phishing emails right now, we all have an ability to spot the send $1,000 to me if you would like, and I'll send you $1 million in gold bullion or something like that, emails that we get. But when those get much more targeted and realistic looking to a particular individual, that is a problem that I think cybersecurity professionals are concerned about. You don't solve those necessarily by shutting down generative models, but the way these generative models all work, they have a layer, like a safety layer above them, that can spot some of these patterns pretty quickly, especially when they're being generated en masse, like they would have to be in order to, you know, to make a difference in the cybersecurity space. Plus, you know, we have lots of other, you know, two-factor authentication and things that we probably should all just be a little bit more aware of what's coming into our inbox. I do think that in this, there will be a little sort of gap here between when people learn to adapt and when the companies learn to adapt to this and when the, you know, the cyber criminals start using these tools. So I am a little worried about that space. I do think it's worth attention, both from us as users of email and lots of other technology, but also from the companies. And I think a lot of the generative AI companies are quite concerned about that particular use case as well. And so for generative AI, that's one that I'm particularly worried about. There's lots of other spaces. Like I've already mentioned the ones that can actually, you know, result in the loss of human life in a much more direct way, where I think AI is, yeah, you know, we should pay a lot of attention to those uses, but those aren't really the ones that are raised by generative AI at this point right now.
There are pretty serious geopolitical implications for the regulatory question. You know, China, I think, recently just unleashed more regulation of its own generative AI industry and its development of that industry. And so obviously there are, I agree with you, I think cybersecurity is the space to watch for here, but there are questions about stifling, you know, private innovation in a way that puts us behind other countries and leaves us more vulnerable in a national security sense. Do you have thoughts on that, Neil? Because that's, I haven't really heard quite enough conversation on in that area, although it's obviously a major concern, knowing how much China has invested into generative AI. So if there were, let's say, a licensing regime to step in, that would step into the picture, or other, you know, an agency that starts to regulate generative AI, we don't know exactly what the contours of that would look like, but what are the risks in terms of like our geopolitical standing in terms of competition?
Yeah. So, you know, I wish the hearing on Tuesday had talked a lot more about this. I didn't even hear a mention of China in the discussion. The U.S. right now has a enormous advantage in this space. We are set up in the way that we treat software innovation to focus on the effects at the end, right? And not on a licensing regime up front. This is very different than how Europe is planning to do it. They have a law that's pretty close to being in effect around AI specifically. And then they have several other laws that already make it very difficult to do some of this work. And then China, obviously, you know, I've heard people call it thoughtful regulation. But its goal is not the same as we would have here. The goal of Chinese AI regulation is to protect the Communist Party there, and to ensure that, you know, the populace does not get out of hand with these types of models, and that they're not powerful tools for, you know, self-expression in a way that would threaten the leadership in that country. So all of that's to say, we right now have an advantage in our regulatory approach. And that's shown by the fact that these companies and the innovation is largely happening here. It would be a huge detriment to us to cede that ground to China, or even to like copy Europe and freeze our regulation in a way, or freeze our innovation in a way that would mean that China's applications would lap us. And so I do worry about that a lot. There's no reason for us to do that. We have, like you said, we have the tools to deal with at least the concerns that we have now. We also have the ability to adapt to that. I keep going back to the idea that the U.S. is the land of, you know, pioneers and frontiersmen. We are the people who go out and forge into the unknown, and we deal with the problems as they come up. If we sat at home and tried to imagine all the things that could go wrong and write the rules that keep them from happening, we would never leave the house. And that's sort of the Europe model. And so we should lean into that. We should lean into our strength in dealing with problems as they come up, but innovating along the way, because that's gotten us, you know, the innovation that we have now. And I think we should revel in the fact that the U.S. is in the lead in this space, and we should take advantage of it. It's possibly the only way, and this is a little bit off topic, maybe it's possibly the only way we're going to outgrow the massive federal debt crisis that we're facing. So, is to, you know, take advantage of our ability to produce good products and services that make people's lives better and that boost GDP through AI.
Until we then tax all of that revenue and redistribute it into inefficient government programs. Neil, is there anything else that we haven't touched on you think is an important point, or something this is pretty critical for people to understand about generative AI or AI more broadly?
There's two things I might add in here, and they're sort of related to each other. What's really interesting about generative AI is that, you know, I think it presents some great opportunities. It has some threats to interesting groups of people at this point, right? Content creators, I think, are very nervous. The news media, I think, is very nervous about this technology because it works on, you know, their tools of the trade, words and video and audio and images. And I think there's a huge amount of productivity and creativity that's going to be coming out from these products, but it's going to be very disruptive to the elites who kind of consider themselves the tastemakers or the agenda setters of the world. And so we saw this before. Social media was in a similar way, was a big threat, at least to the advertising model of some of the traditional media. And no surprise, traditional media was not a big fan of many of these platforms. I think AI is even more personally a sort of threat to maybe traditional models of journalism. And so I think you can expect to see some coverage that would, you know, come from that frame. I don't think that so many of these people were often concerned when automation threatened blue collar jobs, but suddenly, yeah, I think they're concerned now. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And then the second point I think is around, I do think that AI is sort of the next front in the, culture war that we've been ongoing. I already said, you know, Congress finally figured out like how to talk about social media in a way. It kind of understands it, and it understands the sort of political, I say figured out, that they figured out how to score political points by talking about social media, right? And so on both sides. And so I think like all things, AI is sort of going to be the next front in this culture war. It's going to be people arguing about like, hey, this misinformation is, you know, and we saw some of that in the hearing already. This misinformation is going to shape elections, or it's going to be woke, and it's going to, you know, suppress conservative ideas. I think we should dig into those issues. We shouldn't just let them go, but also I think we should see them for the sort of next step in what is a continuing back and forth between the political parties, and that in many ways it'll be less about the policy at the end of the day and a little bit more about like who can score political points about this stuff. So those are just the two things that kind of jump out to me as far as political dynamics in DC. It'll be interesting to see what coverage looks like, how it might be biased, and you know, who's going to be able to best make the political points from accusing, you know, various AI platforms of shifting the narrative or distorting the narrative. So
more
of the same.
Right. No, and it will be interesting because if you're also sort of in the space where you're helping to prevent any possible competitors that might be, you know, for just one hypothetical, like what Elon Musk is trying to do to Twitter, or a Rumble, like the Rumble to the AI YouTube, then you might not have much of a leg to stand on.
Right. Exactly.
Neil Chelzin is the... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say also the other thing that jumps out to me is that, you know, the Biden administration has, you know, a lot of different documents that they've come out with around AI. They're calling for accountability, but they never really say to whom. I think they basically mean accountable to the Biden administration. and so we should think really hard about like what that might look like. I think even they should look think pretty hard about what it might look like to have AI accountable to government agencies when those agencies are in the hands of people that they don't agree with. So a word of caution.
That's a great point. I'm not sure they have thought about that. Neil Chelzin is a senior research fellow at the Center for Growth and Opportunity, obviously also the former chief technologist at the FTC, and he writes on Substack. Neil, where can people find your Substack?
So my Substack is outofcontrol.substack.com, and I am on Twitter at Neil_Chelzin. I hope people reach out. This is a great topic, and thanks so much for having me on.
Of course. The book, as we mentioned earlier, is to go along with the theme of the Substack, is called Getting Out of Control, Emergent Leadership in a Complex World. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at The Federalist. We will be back with more Federalist Radio Hour soon. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
Heard the faint voice of reason, and then it faded away.